City of Kingston moves to enforce a quote-unquote daytime camping ban. CBC reporting shows cuts to Yukon Hospital last year had dire impacts. A drifting cargo ship likely responsible for damage to internet cables under the Red Sea. Israel strikes and kills 7 foreign aid workers in Gaza, including a dual candidate U.S. citizen. Opposition leader in India arrested in lead-up to election, and massive earthquake rocks Taiwan. Good morning. It's Wednesday, April 3rd. I'm Nora. Here are your headlines. Starting this morning in Kingston, where bylaw officers have moved to enforce a quote-unquote daytime camping ban against people staying in one of the city's parks. Several camp residents received notices letting them know to take down their shelters 1 hour before sunrise. The notices stated that Kingston police had been given the authority to act if people don't comply, according to the CBC. The notices also stated that people would not be given any further warnings. Advocates say that many of the shelters are in Bell Park, which is the area that the city is targeting. The shelters there are too big to take down and put up every day, and that the city is effectively displacing displaced people through the policy. The report from Dan Takema from CBC notes that the fire department is concerned about fires, saying that fires have risen by 700% in 6 years. What isn't mentioned, though what we know thanks to Takema's reporting, is that rental properties in Kingston aren't necessarily much safer for people either when it comes to fire. You will remember from this podcast that CBC found one landlord who owned dozens of units across the city, and he was not compelled to respect fire safety laws. Two people had died in a fire at one of his units. So the question really is begged, what are these folks supposed to do? Where are they expected to go and actually be safe and secure? Or is the city of Kingston's solution to just kick them out of the park and hope they die somewhere? I mean, this is just so cruel and disgusting. I hope that folks are fighting their city on this one. Next to Yukon, where the CBC's revealed documents that have showed that surgeons were caught by surprise by cuts made by the Yukon Hospital Corporation. Last October, the corporation told the territorial government that it was tracking towards a $6 billion deficit. In order to deal with the deficit, there was going to be hiring freezes, operating rooms were taken out of service to cut down on elective surgeries, and they dropped one of two MRI technologists. The corporation hoped to save about $625,000 also by spending less on agency nurses, though in the documents obtained by CBC, they acknowledged that these cuts would likely put greater strain on everyone else, including causing nursing burnout. Here's what CBC's Katie Todd described was the anticipated impact of the cuts. Quote, while the service reduction was in place, it said the waitlist for scopes would increase by 39 people a month, the waitlist for orthopedic services by 17 people a month, and the general surgery waitlist by 15 people a month. In the medical imaging department, it forecast people would be waiting 3 times longer for non-urgent CT scans, 18 months instead of 6 months. It predicted people would be waiting twice as long for MRIs, pushing semi-urgent cases to 5 months and non-urgent cases to 2 years. For mammograms, it expected the minimum wait time would grow from 11 months to 14 months, unquote. I love how this is in such technical bureaucratic speak, as if like someone waiting for a non-urgent MRI for 2 years is okay. Like, who's getting an MRI? Someone that needs one. How is an MRI going to be non-urgent? Of course, there's certain levels of urgency, but no one who needs an MRI is just like chilling as if nothing else is a problem in their life. It's really unacceptable. Doctors and surgical staff only found out about the cuts in November, and several wrote to the Yukon premier and ministers to express, quote, disappointment and anger, unquote. They accused the Yukon Hospital Corporation of putting balancing the budget over the lives of Yukoners. In December, the Yukon government said it would increase funding to the corporation. Now to international news. And first, you might remember reports from earlier this year of internet cables in the Red Sea being severed. I did mention it on the Daily News, after all. Well, we now know more about what might have happened. Initially, the Houthis in Yemen were accused of carrying out attacks that damaged the cables located in the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. The group had denied these allegations, and now a report from Wired explains what likely happened. The reporting finds that in the fighting that had been taking place in the Red Sea over the past few months, a cargo ship called the Ruby Mar was targeted. It was hit by a missile in February, and the 24 people who were on board decided to get back to land. After the crew had abandoned the ship, it began to drift on its own by currents and winds when it eventually sank. And now it's believed that the 171-meter-long, 27-meter-wide cargo ship's anchor was the likely cause behind the damaged internet cables. Wired used satellite imagery, interviews with maritime experts, and internet connectivity data to piece together what happened. The damaged cables had led to a loss of internet connectivity for millions in East Africa and all the way down to Vietnam. I encourage you to check out the report because it's not just a report. It's quite a good little feature. Next, Israel is facing international condemnation and scrutiny after an airstrike killed 7 foreign aid workers in Gaza, including a Canadian-U.S. dual citizen named Jacob Flickinger. Canada joined the UK, Australia, Poland, and the US in calling for an investigation into the killings. The workers were part of the World Central Kitchen. The organization helped build a dock off the Mediterranean shore in Gaza to get aid there since the border crossing at Rafah continues to remain closed. Organizations like the World Central Kitchen that work in war zones take several steps to ensure the safety of their staff. That includes providing warring parties with their coordinates and driving in clearly marked vehicles. The World Central Kitchen said it provided the IDF with its coordinates and that the 7 aid workers were in clearly marked vehicles at the time of the airstrikes. The organization was not only helping feed Gazans who were being forcibly starved, it also provided shelter for people looking for safety. The organization has announced that it will be suspending its operations following this airstrike. Now, it's pretty clear that not only did Israel just happen to kill them, they very much targeted them, as the IDF not only knew where they were, but it took 3 airstrikes to actually kill the aid workers. And now, forcing the organization to pull out of Gaza, Israel gets what it wants, which is the continued forced starvation of the people of Gaza. There have been more than 200 aid workers killed in Gaza since the start of the war. Next, a key opposition leader in India has been placed in an extended detention just 3 weeks before their national election. The leader of the MND party, or AAP, Arvind Kejriwal, was accused of accepting around $12 million in bribes from liquor contractors. He and his party denied these allegations, calling them fabricated. He was initially arrested on March 21st and held in custody for 10 days. A court decided to extend his detention until April 15th, a few days before the start of the elections on April 19th. The AAP is part of a broad coalition called India, which is opposed to Prime Minister Narendra Modi and the governing BJP. The bloc has accused Modi of attempting to rig the election by arresting Kejriwal. Other senior members of the AAP have been imprisoned prior to Kejriwal's arrest in the same corruption case. And finally, a developing story. An earthquake has hit Taiwan and triggered tsunami warnings. The earthquake was magnitude 7.4, and the epicenter was 18 kilometers south of the city of Hualien on Taiwan's eastern coast. The last time an earthquake hit Hualien was in 2018. Then it killed 17 people and injured hundreds of others. But the last time a quake of this size struck Taiwan was 25 years ago. Many buildings were tilted or knocked down completely by the quake. At least 9 people have been killed, and nearly 1,000 have been wounded so far. Those are your headlines for Wednesday, April 3rd. I'm Nora. You're listening to this podcast at sandynora.com, on the Real News Network podcast feed, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Don't forget, we're coming to Edmonton on April 20th. You can get your tickets at the Citadel Theatre box office. I hope to see you there and share this with your friends in Edmonton so that I don't get those messages a day after the show saying, oh my God, Nora, I wish that I had known. Yeah, I'm doing my best. We don't have access to mass media. It kind of sucks, I know. But you know what? We're going to have a great time. So tell your friends. We'll see them there.